Welcome to episode 4 of Two Guys Gaming. In this month's episode, we're going to double dip into Magic the Gathering. We'll talk about Fate Reforged and Dragons of Tarkir. We'll also give our impressions of the Xbox 360 version of Diablo 3, because we finally got a chance to sit down and play that. But before we do any of that, we'll talk about what we've been gaming lately. So, Chris, what have you been gaming?
Been playing Afro Samurai for Xbox 360, which is terrible.
Gotta have those games in your library, though.
It's terrible. Yeah, I guess. It was. I got it for $4 and some change, free shipping on eBay, so okay. I couldn't resist the call. I've been playing Odin Sphere for PlayStation 2, which is a really awesome game.
Sounds familiar. I don't think I've ever played it, but it does sound familiar.
It's really cool. It's like RPG, like kind of Streets of Rage elements. Like really, really neat stuff. Been kind of addicted to that for a while. And what else? I got Dark Watch for PlayStation 2, and I've been playing that. That's really cool. Have you ever played that?
I haven't heard of it.
It's like a shooter, but you're basically like a cowboy, and you get bit by a vampire, and you're basically shooting the shit out of like skeletons and stuff. It's really cool game. I've been addicted to that for a while. That's really about it. And then obviously deck building.
Right.
That's it. What about you?
That's pretty much all I've been doing is I've been messing around with the magic cards and deck building and stuff like that. I haven't done a whole lot of video gaming necessarily. Mostly I've been watching streams on Twitch and stuff like that just to pass the time and keep myself occupied while I'm doing other things. I did go on to Magic the Gathering Online because I saw that they were doing a Rise of the Eldrazi draft format. So I figured I'd check that out because I never got to play that set, and it showed because I got my butt handed to me repeatedly in that. So I learned my lesson there. Never spend money on a digital product in a format that you're not familiar with because I just got crushed. Other than that, I play Marvel Heroes daily. I've been leveling my Deadpool up to max level. It's been kind of fun. And Marvel Puzzle Quest, I play that daily just because it's one of those.
I still haven't played that.
It's an okay game. Yeah. It gets addictive. I mean, at first it's really slow. It can get addictive. It's one of those they want you to pay to play type things, but you can still do pretty well even if you don't pay to play. It takes a little while to build up your roster of heroes and stuff like that, but it's okay. And along those same lines, anytime I have any free time and I have my tablet, I usually load up Candy Crush and just mess around with that, which is a game that I never thought that I would get into.
I hate that game. I hate that game so much.
I simultaneously love and hate that game.
Yeah.
If they fall in the way that they're supposed to fall, then you win the game. If not, then you lose the game.
And you get really pissed off all the time. It ruins your damn day.
Yep. Other than that, as far as gaming goes, I've mostly just been trying to keep up with the website as much as I can, planning some videos that I want to do for the YouTube page.
That makes one of us.
Which is live, but there's nothing there.
There will be.
There will be after tonight, hopefully. That's about it. Alright, this month on the tabletop, we're going to talk about Magic the Gathering again, which we haven't talked about since the first episode 6 months ago. But we're back on a regular schedule now, so after talking about World of Warcraft trading card game, we're going to talk about Magic this month, mostly because there's a new set coming out, and we're both really excited about it. And for a while there, we were actually not very excited about Magic, and the fact that there's a new set out and it's got us excited, I figured, what the heck, let's talk about it. But before we get to that, we'll talk about the old set, maybe some of the reasons why we weren't excited about it, and then we can lead into why we're excited about the game again. So the set that we're going to talk about first is Fate Reforged. That's the second set in the Cons of Tarkir block. We didn't really play much during that set.
No, we didn't. I mean, I don't know if it was due to the fact that we just didn't have a lot of time to actually get together and play. Or it's just lack of interesting cards in that set.
I think it's a combination of both. We were both saying at the beginning of this month that it seemed like Dragons came very quickly after Fate Reforged. It seems like Fate Reforged just came out. Right. As you said, we didn't really have a lot of time to get together. I didn't even really pick up that many cards for it. Usually I pick up a booster box and a fat pack just so that I have cards to play with and I have cards to collect with. And I just picked up a fat pack for it. And as I was opening the fat pack, it was kind of, I didn't really, you know, get that feeling that I usually get. Usually
it was just underwhelming.
Yeah, it was very underwhelming. Yeah. Usually I'll pick up the fat pack and I'll pull some cards or there'll be some exciting cards that I see in there, but I wasn't really blown away by any of the cards that came out. I mean, there were dragons and stuff like that, but...
Dragons.
Yeah, you like dragons, and we'll talk about that
when
we get to the dragon set. But it didn't really wow me like it usually does. And I didn't even... I mean, I didn't even pick up a booster box for it. I guess that's good because it's a small set, although I've picked up booster boxes in small sets in the past. So.
Yeah, there just wasn't much in there. I mean, other than a few cards that jumped out at me, obviously the Soulfire Grandmaster, which basically gives all your instants and sorceries lifelink. That was a great card. And then the, was it Yugen?
Yugen,
the,
yeah.
The Spirit Dragon? Like, all right, that one's cool. But
that is actually a pretty cool card.
Yeah,
I've seen that played a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And it's a fun card to watch.
Yeah, yeah, that's a really good card. But, I mean, other than that, there just wasn't a lot in there. Which surprised me, just because on eBay, you know how I normally do my single shopping before the set comes out, and people were going absolutely ape on eBay for these cards.
Right.
I mean, Brutal Horde Chief. Someone, I actually saw this auction end, and for four of them, someone paid over $120 for four of them. That card can be had for a little bit over $5 now on eBay a piece.
That's insane.
Yeah. I don't understand it.
Maybe I should have picked up a box. I just got the suckers at the beginning of the set. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, I mean, I did an article about the set at the beginning, and I thought from the beginning that it was kind of going to be a bridge between the two sets, and that seems like that's what it ended up being. I actually pulled a Soulfire Grandmaster, whatever it's called, now that you mention it. That's one of the money cards that I pulled. I pulled that one, and I pulled the Monastery Swiss Spear, I think that's the other thing. No, that's the one we were talking about earlier. I don't know. Monastery Mentor.
Oh, yeah.
I pulled one of those, too, which is, that's big in standard. That's actually big in modern, too, so that one will hold value even after this set cycles out. So I might hold on to that one. But, yeah, those are the two cards that I pulled afterwards. As I was looking through the set and seeing, well, is there anything worth anything, and did I get anything worth anything from my fat pack to at least feel like I got my money's worth, which I do in general afterwards, but
yeah,
so I got a couple of those, but it just felt like it was a bridge between cons and dragons, and that's sort of how it worked out. As far as standard goes, I haven't seen a lot of the cards in standard. I mean, they may be popular, they may be, I mean, I guess there's some like Mardu Scout that we were talking about before. That I put into my standard deck, and I've seen a lot of standard decks. So I guess there are some cards, as there are going to be in any set, but what it really seemed like for this set is that it's much stronger in limited from what I've seen in drafting and in sealed. I said that I've been watching some streams. I've been watching a lot of Magic the Gathering streams because I couldn't even handle watching Hearthstone anymore. I got so irritated by it, so I figured, well, there's some really cool Magic the Gathering streams on Star City Games and Channel Fireball and a couple other people that put on some really good streams. So I started watching them, and then watching them, and I actually joined a couple of drafts, one or two, on Magic the Gathering online. And there's definitely some very good cards in Fate Reforged as far as drafting goes. But
kind of seems that's what the set was geared towards, was drafting.
Well, I did some research. Imagine that. Research pays off.
Research.
Yeah. I did some research.
See, we actually know what we're talking about.
We do. Sometimes. I went on to the Magic website to kind of see what they had to say about Fate Reforged, and that's pretty much what they said, where it was going to be like a limited bridge, a drafting bridge, a steel bridge, whatever you want to call it, between cons and dragon, to where, you know, it was going to be part of cons and it was going to be part of dragon as far as the drafting goes this time. So even they said that it was mostly a limited set.
I guess that makes sense why we didn't really get it, so to speak. kind of sucked our love of the game away for a little while, where we just didn't have much interest in the game or playing, just because when, you know, we, for the most part, we generally just play Constructed. Right. We basically play Legacy, Constructed, anything goes, essentially.
Right.
But it's tough when you have this whole huge pool of cards to choose from, and you see this little set come out, and there's stuff that's like, why would I use any of these cards?
Right.
Like, I mean, the Brutal Horde Chief, like, that card has been done before. I don't remember the name of it now, but that card has been done before. I actually have it in, I think, my Red Deck Wins. I actually have a card that does the same thing. It just kind of seemed like they just rehashed so much stuff in that set, like abilities that have been done, that it just had zero interest for me. I honestly did not pick up one pack of it. I think I bought a few singles, and I threw them in some decks, play tested them myself, and then at the end of the day, cycled them right out of those decks just because it didn't really fit in that well.
Right.
So, yeah, just not an impressive set.
Edit.
But I think overall, now that we're looking at from a standard point of view, because we are now going to start dipping into the standard waters, I think it actually has a little bit more to offer than what we previously thought. But
that was an idea that you came up with, that we build a couple of standard decks just because it would be interesting to see what the process is of having to cycle cards out every year or so, and having to find maybe a new strategy even based on what is cycling out. Because you said that you put together a Constellation deck, and when Theros cycles out, that deck is going to have to change completely.
Yeah, that deck's gone. I mean, that is exclusively from the Theros block.
Right.
I mean, I think I have a few cons cards in there, but nothing that's going
to
keep that deck together.
It's going to have to either go away or just become something completely different. So you came up with that idea, which was a really good idea, and I was on board, and I'm like, okay, yeah. And I immediately started thinking, okay, what kind of decks do I want to put together? I put together a mono-red aggro, just because it seems like that's the cheapest way to go. In the first case, if you're trying to get into standard, you just go mono-red aggro, and throw in a whole bunch of cheap cards, and hopefully you have a strategy, which I do. But you just put together a whole bunch of cards. And then I was looking at a control deck. I don't know what I'm going to do with control. But getting back to the original point, there was quite a few State Reforged cards that ended up going into the deck, if you look at it from that point of view, because now you only have this limited pool, so now these 100 and whatever cards are much more, or a much larger percentage of the overall cards that you can choose from. Whereas, as you say, we play Legacy. I'd never thought of it as Legacy before, but that's essentially what it is. We can pull from anywhere,
exactly,
the entire history of Magic, and we can throw the cards into our deck. So you look at 100 something cards, 160 cards or whatever, 168 cards across 20 years of history. And as you say, there's not really much that they can do now that hasn't been done before.
Right.
Or they can't be done in some other way. I mean, they have the dash mechanic, which they may have done before. I don't know. I know that they recycle mechanics every so often.
Yeah.
And sometimes they throw them in different sets with different things. Like, I can't remember the mechanic now, but looking back on it, there was a mechanic that I saw now, and then I saw it from an earlier set when somebody was playing a Vintage or a Modern or something like that. So they do cycle mechanics back through. They don't always do them at the same rate, that sort of thing. I don't know if they've done the dash mechanic, but the dash mechanic is kind of cool.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of that.
Put something out, swing for it, and take it back so that it can't get removed or whatever.
Right.
Because usually it's on the smaller creatures.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, really good for the aggro.
Yeah. I think that is why I find standard so intriguing, because it actually forces you to deal with this limitation of deck building instead of just having this huge 20-year plus surplus of cards.
Right.
You're literally limited. I think it's fantastic.
Traditionally, as a player, I've always wanted to put together decks to do weird things and strange things, and they may not always win, and they may not always counter very well, but you know, there's always some sort of underlying theme to them. I'm a big fan of, you know, tribal decks and stuff like that, and I mentioned this before, but, and then sometimes I'm just, sometimes I'll just be going through my cards, and I'll see a card, and I'll think, oh, I'd like to make a deck around that. You know, like, I was looking through my cards, and I noticed that there's a bunch of walls, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if I can make a wall deck where you just can't ever hit me, because I've got all these walls out there, and they can counter pretty much everything that you're throwing at me. So that's traditionally how I like to put together decks. So I was actually really excited initially about being able to pull from pretty much anything and just put together these weird kind of combos. And that's what vintage and modern is about. It's about putting together the combos, and it's about being quick decks. And the, you know, rich people vintage where they put together the multiple Black Lotus decks and stuff like that.
Screw them.
But for me, it was just about being able to put all of these cards together in new and interesting ways. And now that, when you suggested standard, I had the same kind of feeling where it was like, okay, now, when I sat down to put together my deck, now it became, well, I have 60 cards to choose from, I have only these cards to choose from, so do I put four of this in? You know, before you could put four in, and
right,
it might not have made a difference, but now do I put four of this in, or do I put two of it in?
Right.
Or do I put three of it in? How does that affect the overall deck? And it's funny how taking just one card out and replacing it with something else can completely change how a deck works. Like, you wouldn't think that, but
it's very true. Yeah. I figured that out when I was building my standard deck.
Yeah.
Like, oh wow, if I take out X card, then all my other cards, in some cases, they don't interact anymore.
Right.
Like, this one card, you have to include four of them. Because if you don't, your whole deck, the whole deck strategy just kind of falls apart.
Right, the more cards, obviously the more cards you put in, the more likely you are to pull that particular card when you need that particular card, whereas, you know, you could be sitting there and saying, oh, I really like a spell now to buff this particular creature, or I really need removal, or I really need this. So, you always see the four of strategy, you always hear about the four of strategy, and that's the most consistent, obviously, but at the same time, you have to be thinking in from a standard viewpoint. Now, we don't necessarily, if we're just going to play against each other, we still have to think of how are we going to counter what the other person is going to do. But if you're thinking about it from a traditional standard viewpoint, you have to think, how am I going to deal with red, mono red aggro? How am I going to deal with blue white control? How am I going to deal with, you know, blue green black control? How am I going to deal with all of these different kinds of decks? And that's what I was finding as I was playtesting my deck, because I don't have all the cards for it. I was just playtesting on the computer. But it played really well against aggro. We were talking about it, you know. When you're playing aggro versus aggro, it's just, for the most part, whoever can get the most damage out there the quickest.
Yeah, whoever drops first.
Right.
Yeah.
But then when I started testing it against a control deck, I had to think of different ways to do this. You know, you can't just necessarily, unless the other person gets mana screwed or whatever, then it's just, okay, I'll swing at your face.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can't play anything type thing. So it really forces you to think about different strategies and how different strategies interact. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I had never considered before and I'm considering much more now. And it's got me really excited about the game again. And I think you would say the same.
Yeah, no, it definitely has. You know, I think when you're just building decks for, you know, modern or legacy, you just kind of take for granted what you're putting in that deck because you have so much to choose from, and when you have such a limited pool of cards, you have to pay, I guess, closer attention to what you're putting in and what's out there, you know, as what pertains to your strategy. It was a lot more enjoyable. At least that's what I found. A lot more enjoyable. Yeah.
For instance, your dragon deck that you have put together, like you have Quicksilver Amethyst in there to get stuff out quicker. That's not something that's available to you now, even though they're releasing all of these new and exciting dragons in the new set. And I mean, again, Fate Reforged, we don't want to say that it was a bad set. It's just that it didn't quite work for what we wanted to do at the time. It wasn't until we started looking at the game in a different way that it became something that we could actually use and get some enjoyment from the cards.
You're forced to use those cards in a way. You have to. You have such a limited the pool of cards to choose from, you have to take what Wizards is giving you.
Right, exactly. If you take those 168 out, then, you know, you're taking out a considerable percentage of your pool.
Yeah. As far as my Dragons go, I mean, that deck can never be a standard deck. I mean, I when we start talking about the standard, trying to play standard, I said to myself, like, I'm actually going to pull one over on him. I'm going to make my Dragon standard. I'm like, I'm going to figure out how to do it. No. No, you can't. I mean, I was close to getting the mana production I needed, but by including the generator servants, you know, they add two colors or whatever, you sacrifice them, and the Nykthos Shrine to Nyx, I was going to throw four of those into it, be like, all right, here we go, but even then, it's not enough. I mean, I'm able, with those, playtesting it, I was able to get out a few Dragons, but nowhere near what the Amulets allowed me to do. I mean, those things are insanely overpowered. I don't even know why they thought that was a great idea. Like, let's put this card out there. I think it's just a screw with you, to be honest.
It's one of those things where, like, I think Wizards, sometimes they just try to see what they can get away with. You know, they'll put a card out that just breaks whatever is happening at the time, and then, like, you know, they'll do something like Annihilator, where it's just, whoever gets the biggest creature out there is just eating the other, not only eating the other person, but eating the other person.
Eating everything you have, I'm a big fan of that. I actually got to see Eldrazi in action last time I was at the local game store.
Oh, yeah?
I will not say their name until they pay us for plugging them. So. But, yeah, no, there's a guy there who's playing Eldrazi ramp deck.
Oh, yeah?
And it was really funny because they're playing, and they had, you know, you have people on each side just kind of stand behind watching the game, and it was so funny because the guy he was playing, the score was definitely, it was lopsided, and this guy was clearly ramping to draw some Eldrazi, and this other guy was pretty proud of himself for beating the Eldrazi guy, and it was funny because the minute he started drawing Eldrazi, like, this other guy that was standing behind him looks at the kid, and he was just doing this, like, cutting his throat, like, oh, no, just bold, and it was so funny.
Time to scoop, son.
Yep, exactly, just scoop, it's over. And it was funny, and the guy's sitting there smiling like he didn't really understand. He knew he was playing a ramp deck, I think. I don't think he understood what was actually in that
coming,
ramp. Yeah. And the minute he started dropping Eldrazi, it was just like, the whole board was gone. It was like, oh, my God. You're dead.
Yeah.
Now I kind of see why people are crying about the new Eldrazi.
It's coming in the fall. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
I'm sure sometime before it hits.
Yeah, definitely.
The only time that I ever got to play Eldrazi, was on one of the Duels of the Planeswalkers. Had Eldrazi in it. Must have been the first one that ever came out, because that would have been right around the time that the original set came out.
Yeah.
And, it's crazy once you start getting those things out there and the different combos that you can use. Like, there's one card that for every permanent that they sacrifice, it becomes under your control. So, like, not only are you annihilating their board, but it's now becoming your board.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much crazy stuff that you can do with that.
Yeah. There is. Those cards are insane.
Absolutely.
Now, you whip those out into a modern deck with Quicksilver Amulet, and that is a wrap.
That is going to be there's not much happening there. Well, Miracle is that's a popular card in at least one of the vintage archetypes.
Is that the one that's getting reprinted in Modern Masters 15?
Yes.
Nice. I'm not buying a box, like you, but...
I'm not buying a box.
I'm glad I got that out of your head.
I mean, initially it was kind of like, ooh. And then it was like, oh, wait, what the hell am I thinking? I'm going to pay three times what I normally pay for a box.
So you say Tarmogoyf?
Yeah, just so I could say I have a Tarmogoyf. Take a picture. Make my Facebook profile picture.
You Look have no friends.
Look at me. Don't you love me?
No.
anyhow,
the next set that's coming out this weekend is actually the pre-release to give you some idea of when we're talking, is Dragons. Now, the Dragons were introduced in Fate Reforged, so that's also a positive as far as the set goes. It gave us a little bit of a sneak peek into what we were going to get in the actual Dragons. I don't think anybody expected. I mean, Blizzards has never done a dragon set before. I mean, they've had dragons in all of their sets, but they've never done anything where they were specifically talking about dragons and having them be the focus of the set.
It's going to be all ramp decks. All ramp decks.
It's going to be really interesting to see how this changes the format of Standard, because even before we were talking about putting together Standard, I actually got into watching Standard through, you know, Star City Games and a couple of the events that they put on. And
don't plug them until they pay us. go, continue.
Well, I've been watching some Standard, and it's going to be interesting to see how the dragons change everything. I mean, I was hoping to get to the pre-release this weekend, but Liam's not feeling well, so we're probably not going to go. But I'm really interested to see how this set changes things. Like, it feels like it's really going to shake things up. I mean, there's a lot of cards that maybe don't seem playable, but are going to end up playable. And just from the sheer power, as you said, it's going to... I mean, is it going to just be guy who gets their dragon out first wins, or... I mean, how's it going to affect everything?
No, it's going to be... My official predictions, obviously, I already said, are ramp decks. I think another big meta is going to be warrior deck. I think we're going to see a lot of warrior decks.
A lot of warrior decks?
Yeah, I'm going to say black-white warrior. I think going to be a big one. Because that dragon card I showed you.
The Dragon Hunter or whatever?
Yeah, Dragon Hunter. I guarantee people are going to be rolling four of those in their deck.
Most likely.
That just shuts dragons down right there.
Right, because you can just chump block forever, and it doesn't do any damage to it because it has protection from dragons. And that's one of those Wizards things where they're just like, okay, we'll give you a whole bunch of dragons, plus we'll give you this guy that doesn't die to dragons, so good luck with that.
Yeah, that card pisses me off.
I know, I'll definitely be playing a couple of those in some of my decks.
Terrible.
For us, though, I think this set came at the right time, because as we were saying, we kind of got out of Magic for a while. I mean, I don't know how serious I actually am about this, but I was actually thinking about just liquidating my whole collection and just saying, you know, I mean, maybe it's time to move on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about you, but...
Yeah, I was kind of in the same boat where I thought about, okay, you know, how many decks do I really need for our monthly nerd night? And, you know, like, I probably need, like, 2-3 decks. And I could just sell the rest and just call it a day. Like, I was definitely at that point where I was just so underwhelmed with the whole hobby in general. I don't really want to do it anymore. And then all of a sudden, the spoilers for Dragons come out, and I'm putting decks together left and right, you know.
Well, I figured you'd be into it because you're all about the Dragons, and you always have been. I mean, you had a Dragon deck even before this.
Yeah.
And it's kind of strange because I've always been, as I said, I'm like a tribal deck builder, but it's just never been one that I've tried to put together. I've never considered
it's
a dragon deck before.
Yeah. I thought about it like way back. I remember, you know, when I was a teenager and Mirage came out and they had 4 dragons, one for each color. And I remember it was like Catacomb Dragon in black. And that's when I remember back then I was like, I want to make a dragon deck. Yeah. But at that point there just wasn't enough. It was basically you could only do basically a 2-color dragon deck,
right?
Like you do Shivan Dragon and Catacomb Dragon, and that was
basically... Well, yeah, dragons have traditionally been red or black mostly.
Yeah, yeah.
There haven't been a lot of... I mean, I guess the occasional green, but...
Yeah, yeah.
It hasn't been like the D&D dragons where they come in a variety of colors up until this set.
Right, yeah. That's why I'm so psyched about the set. Now, you're going to see lots more dragon decks out there. I think it'll be interesting, you know, if you build a dragon deck or something that includes dragons in it, just to see what happens. Dragons versus dragons.
We're just dragons just are button heads left and right. And I traditionally haven't put together a dragon deck. I think it's mostly because how I put together my decks is just the cards that I have from the boxes and whatnot that I've picked. And the sets up until now haven't been dragon-oriented. I mean, there's been a couple, and, you know, every now and then you pull a dragon, but even looking through my collection, I didn't have enough dragons to build what I would consider to be even a decent deck. But then, even from the Fate Reforged cards that I looked through for my Fat Pack to try to rework some of my decks, I found some dragons, and I looked at them, and I tossed them into a couple of my decks. So, I mean, even that was enough to kind of get the juices flowing. And as I told you in the conversations that we had, if you can't beat them, join them. I mean, because the dragons are here, the name of the set, I'm going to have dragons. I might as well put something together to try to make it work.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be interesting. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what Standard holds in the months ahead.
Yeah, definitely. It'll be interesting to see how things change.
Yeah.
Now, getting into the nitty-gritty a little bit, some of the mechanics that are prevalent in the set. This is the one that I was thinking about earlier that I couldn't remember. Rebound. I know Rebound has been done before.
Yeah, it was called, I think it was called something else. I want to say it was, but it was, yeah, it's been done.
That's one that's been done before.
Yeah, you cast a spell, and then your next turn...
You can exile it and recast it?
Yeah, you recast it without having to pay its cost.
Right.
That's now I have a question about that. Okay. I mean, maybe it's just me, but let's say you cast that. You cast the initial spell.
Right.
And then you fork it. You fork it.
Parental advisory.
Yeah. You make a copy of that spell. Now, if it's a copy of that spell, technically it gets its characteristics, so would it not get the rebound too? So technically you can cast that spell twice again because you forked it. Fork.
That's now, an interesting question.
Right? That's what I was thinking when I saw first round rebound. I instantly went to fork.
Right.
I was like, if I make a copy of that spell, technically I get the... I get the spell, what it does, and if I get what it does, I also get the ability behind it. So I'd get the rebound.
So that's weird, because when you make a copy of a creature, it becomes a token. So, like, even if you copy a dash creature, the token doesn't get returned to your hand because it's not a creature. But right. I don't know how it works with spells, whether a copy of the spell is technically a token, it gets sacrificed, or does it get put on the exile pile, and then it, once it resolves the second time, then it would be the token that would...
Right.
That's an interesting question.
Yeah.
I hadn't even considered that, but that's really... That'd be really cool if something that you could do.
I'm already thinking... That's what I'm saying. Like, I was already like, oh, wait a second. I think I know how to exploit this.
Yeah.
Like, this would be neat. And then if I get that Soulfire Grandmaster from you... Throw that in there. Give all your spells
Lifelink. Yeah.
And then you're casting them two at a time. For free.
Them.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's crazy. I never even considered that. That's a great idea, though.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to research that.
We'll have to get find some kind of judge's ruling on that to see how that would work.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the cards interact in weird ways. Like I was watching, it was either a modern or a vintage, and they were talking about some Scapeshift deck, and it's basically a deck with all lands. Maybe a couple of creatures. I can't remember. I mean, I looked at the list, but the list didn't look that overwhelming, but they're talking about how it's like a one-turn, two-turn kill, because you basically get this one land out there, and then you sacrifice, or it's once you get seven lands out there, then, you know, the opponent's dead, because you can sacrifice all those lands, and then you go searching in your library for additional lands before a mountain or something like that. I mean, I don't know exactly how it works, but like you know, sometimes, and then somebody explained it to me and it made more sense because I actually went and I got how the deck works and how everything interacts and how it gets put on the stack and stuff like that. And then by the end of it, you end up doing like 18, 20 points of damage or something like that. So it's strange how cards can interact sometimes. And that's why they have judges, is because, you know, stuff like that is Like, what happens if this interacts with this and does this? And
right, right.
So, yeah, the mechanics can be a little squirrely sometimes, but
yeah,
that would be something that I would definitely want to check that out now myself.
Yeah. Because there's also creatures that create that ability, too, where you
saw that.
You know, once you put it in, it's instantly a copy of a spell you play. Right. And then...
Well, Narset's the new planeswalker that's grossly overpriced right now.
Grossly.
she gives your spells rebound, right? Isn't that one of her abilities? Is that her? Or is it? I thought it was her.
I think it was her, yeah.
Yeah. So, also there's Exploit, which...
That you sacrifice your own creature.
Yeah, you get creatures bonus. And you get some kind of bonus from it. I think it's okay. I mean, it's along the line of the Sultai, who are no longer around, I know. They're Lumagar or whatever it is. Whatever. Fat dragon with the elf necklace or whatever.
Yeah.
It's Swagagar.
We can spend the next 5 minutes massacring his name if you want. Right. Shazam! The dragon.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, I'm not too excited about that, but it's along the lines of that particular, I guess it's along the lines of black and everything. So
yeah.
I'm sure there's...
That ability was another one I thought about exploiting. Ha! No pun. But, because if you play, I think it is... Shazam the dragon as he will be known. That's the black and blue dragon.
Yes.
Alright. Because when he comes out, he gives you the ability of whenever you sacrifice a creature, your opponent has to sacrifice a creature. So let's say you put him in an exploit deck, you're sacrificing creatures, you're getting bonuses, and you're forcing your opponent to sacrifice a bunch of their crap.
That's probably going to be an archetype.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Sure. That's definitely one of the decks I'm working towards, is to build
those. Plus, he steals a creature or a planeswalker when he comes into play.
Does he?
Yeah.
Huh. Good for Shazam.
As long as he's on the board, he takes one of your opponent's creatures or planeswalkers.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's definitely going to be something.
Awesome.
So the final new mechanic that I know is Megamorph, which we were talking about it. I know you're not big into the Morph. I finally put together a Morph deck. It's not terribly consistent, but it's kind of fun. It seemed like, and this is probably why you didn't really shine to it too much, because, as we said, we're not drafting players, but in watching drafts, it seems like Morph is a way to avoid mana screw, because if you don't have the mana to, or the right mana to cast that creature, then you can just cast it down as a Morph, you get a body on the board, and... You have a blocker. Drafting is all about tempo. It's all about getting bodies out there. So if you can get bodies out there, even if it's only a 2-2 or whatever, then it's at least something on the board. So I know you weren't too excited about it. I think the mechanic's okay. It's not great. It's, you know, the same kind of thing in my deck where it's, you know, the three colors, as we discussed. Putting together mana for three colors is sometimes not easy. So if you can at least get bodies on the board, and then once you get the mana together, you can start flipping them and up-trading and whatever you want to call it.
Right, right.
Now, Megamorphing, it's the same kind of thing. You flip it up, you put a +1/+1 counter on it. Some of the cards do things when they get flipped up. I said in our conversation that we had when we were talking about Megamorph that it's probably the silliest name for a mechanic I've ever heard.
It always makes me think
of Power Rangers, the Megamorphing Power Rangers, but...
No, it's fun. Megamorph Tarmogoyf.
Megamorph Tarmogoyf. Wizards, get on that. We need that
Make
card.
Make it happen.
Make it happen. We need that card to happen. Megamorphing Tarmogoyf. I love it.
Okay. We know what we're talking about.
Alright, this month on the Digital Playground, we're going to give our impressions of Diablo 3. We finally got a chance last month to sit down and play it on the Xbox 360 as a couch co-op. And, I mean, initially, my impressions are favorable of it as a cooperative game.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was a little bit better than I even expected on a console, because I'm used to playing Diablo on PC. But yeah.
Yeah, it was a little awkward getting used to the console controls if you're used to playing it on the PC. But, I mean, I think it was better than I thought it was going to be, too, because initially I didn't really like it that much when I played it solo. I mean, I got the game as a promotion for World of Warcraft. They're giving it away for, if you signed up for something, you got Diablo 3 free. So I got it through that, and I played it through for a while, and I couldn't really get into it. I mean, the internet universally hated it when it dropped, mainly because it wasn't Diablo 2.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, didn't they try to do that marketplace thing?
Yeah, they tried to do some real money auction house or whatever they called it.
Yeah, and some bullshit like that. That didn't work.
Yeah, people hated it because it basically tweaked the drops so that you weren't getting drops that were useful to your character, because they figured that you could sell them to other people and buy the drops that you needed, and somehow they could get a cut, and they would have like this eBay for Diablo thing going on, but it just never caught on because, again, you know, people hated it because it wasn't in the Diablo spirit. Like, Diablo is all about hitting things in the face and getting loot.
I just want to grab a bunch of loot.
Exactly.
That's all I care about.
Yeah, and if I don't need it, then I just go sell it in town. Like,
exactly.
I'm not going to sell it to some dude for $5 so that I can go buy some other silly thing for $5.
Right.
But I never really got into it. I mean, I played it probably for 2 or 3 weeks. I didn't really make a whole lot of progress. Maybe the first boss or two or something like that. And then I just shelved it and I stopped playing it. It wasn't really something I got into.
It's definitely more of a co-op game.
Well, that's what got me thinking about it again, because I hadn't even thought about it since, but I was listening to the Instance, and Scott Johnson was mentioning about how much fun it is, because he plays it a ton on the PC, and I guess they improved it on the PC, so it's better now. I mean, the auction house is gone, and they have something called Loot 2.0, which is basically Diablo loot, so it's back to being what it's supposed to be.
Right.
So people like it again, and he was mentioning the Xbox 360 version and how much fun it is as a couch co-op game. So I figured, pick it up from Gamefly, and, you know, we can try it out, and we can test it out, and if it's something that we like, maybe it'll become something that we play on a regular basis, or maybe it's something that we play just every now and then to break up the monotony of playing too much Marvel versus Capcom or Gears of War or something like that.
Right.
And it starts off kind of slow. I think that's the other problem with the game, is that the story starts off really slow, and I understand that games try to put you on training wheels now because nobody ever reads the instructions or anything like that, so they can't really drop you in the middle of
readings for chumps.
Exactly. No. Start. Just get me into the game. I want to play this game.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I know that they want to start you on training wheels, but it just felt like this one was excessively easy at the beginning.
Yeah, I kind of felt like that, too. Like, that everything was going a little too swimmingly for us. Where it was too slow to begin with. That was my only complaint about it. I mean, overall, it's great, but yeah, it was just too easy. It was almost too set up. It didn't feel like, it didn't have that wide open world that Diablo is kind of notorious for.
Right.
It was just very, like, okay, you go to point A, you do this, you go back to point B, and you just keep going back and forth.
Well, that's the thing. Like, even at the beginning, you're just walking down a path, and it's just a path that you can walk down. And I know that generally Diablo maps are like that, but usually you have some exploration that you can do, too. You can go around, and, you know, once you get into a map, it's, okay, this is what your primary objective is, but if you want to, you can also do this, and there's, you know, other quests that can pop up that you can get sidetracked by and that sort of thing, but it was entirely too linear. As you said, it was, okay, here you are, now walk down this path, talk to this guy, okay, shoot these zombies, okay, talk to this guy, go in here, talk to this girl, you know.
Yeah.
And then it was just, there wasn't enough action, and it was just, it was way too linear and just way too,
it just felt done.
Yeah.
Like it's been done before.
Right.
I mean, at least at the beginning, I guess if we're going to talk about complaints first, one of my other complaints, I have a couple. One of them, when we're talking about the controls, is I hated the menu controls using the analog stick to, like, cycle through abilities and stuff. I hated that. Like, I had such a hard time getting on just the right spot.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. I had too much coffee or something, but my cursor was all over the goddamn place.
42 tweets from too much coffee.
Yeah. And then the other thing that kind of stuck out was the visuals were very, very dark. Diablo is obviously a very dark game, always has been, but for some reason, this one just felt like it was, like, literally so dark, like, it was kind of hard to see in some instances.
Well, in our missing episode 2 of the podcast, Kevin and I mentioned that when we were contrasting that with Torchlight 2, is that you can still do a dark game, because Torchlight 2 has, you know, kind of the same storyline where there's something there that's killing people or something like that. You know, it's some dark thing that is overtaking the universe just like it is in Diablo, but the palette is so much more varied there. You know,
right.
As you said with Diablo, sometimes it's so dark that you don't know what's going on. It's like, is this thing that I'm hitting a box, or am I actually hitting a creature, you know, should I be picking that thing up over there? Should I be hitting this switch? Is that even a switch?
What was going on? Am I beating up a skeleton? Am I caving in Sean's skull? I don't know what's going on.
it's very monotone, I think it's probably the better word for it. I wrote in the article that I wrote for the website that it felt like it was as if Lego Batman built the game, where it's like, I only work in black, or very dark gray. And then he threw in some browns there just to change it up a little bit. You know, like, the torches are brown so that they light up. And
right.
You're right. It's very dark, and it can sometimes be confusing.
It was very confusing. I think, like, towards the end of where we kind of stopped for the night, like, we're out in, like, the forest, and it was really foggy.
Right.
And, like, it just felt, like, just so recycled.
Yeah.
Like, the enemies were all the same, and it's just like, okay. This screen looks the exact same as the screen before.
Right.
Like, everything just looks the same. What is going on here? Where are we?
we didn't get too far into the game because
we
were both overtired from it being the holidays or just after the holidays and both working our brains out over the holidays.
Yeah.
So we were both tired, and we didn't get very far into it. It was just, eventually our brains just shut down, and we didn't have any hand-eye coordination anymore, so we didn't get too far into it. It does vary a little bit later on, where, you know, you're in a castle or you're
out in the
forest or stuff like that. So we don't want to say that it's completely monotone and completely just straightforward like that, but just at the beginning.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean, we didn't even get through all of the beginning.
Yeah, so we were still going. Yep.
We were still working on it when our brains finally shut down. I guess my big complaint is the targeting system was weird. Even when I went to play it the second time, because I was trying to figure out why I didn't like this game. Like, I should like this game. I like Marvel Heroes, which is one of these types of games. I liked Torchlight. I actually love those two games. I played Marvel Heroes daily, and I just got back into Torchlight 2 again, you know, just in preparing for this and preparing for the article that I wrote to kind of compare and contrast the two to see if I could figure out why I like Torchlight better than I like Diablo. But the targeting system on the console is weird.
It is.
Because, I mean, on the PC you have your mouse cursor that you just point it where you want it to go and it shoots at what you're supposed to shoot at. And it's like, that's more natural. On this, it's the analog stick again, isn't it?
Yeah.
Blizzard could not figure out what to do with that analog stick or how to make it work.
I didn't know if it was me. I don't know. Like, it just felt like, half the time it felt like there was, like, an auto-targeting system that was just so severely
broken.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up because I thought the same thing. I'm like, so, am I supposed to be aiming or am I supposed to just be shooting and hope that I hit this thing?
Right.
And the second time around when I played this, the second time around, I, you know, was going through, and that's when I realized the first time, but the second time around, like, I realized again, like, it was like my brain had forgotten that, you know, this is how you, I don't know if it's the PC gamer in me was
taken over. Diablo.
It's Diablo. I'm supposed to be using a mouse.
But using an analog stick just felt weird. It just felt very. It just didn't flow right. At least as far as menus and targeting, it just felt very flawed. But, I mean, I think as it went on a little bit, I mean, before our brains shut down from exhaustion, I think I enjoyed it. I mean, overall, I enjoyed it. There's lots of loot. Big fan of loot.
Yep.
Fan of kicking the snot out of monsters. Yep. So, you know, there's plenty of those. I mean, it was fun. I mean, it's definitely... It just felt like at that time it's not, it wasn't on the same level as Diablo 2 was to me. Like, Diablo 2 was just like, just such a great game in my eyes. And I guess I went into Diablo 3 thinking like, it was going to be on the same level as Diablo 2. Now, again, we didn't get very far.
Right.
So there's a good chance it's just as good as Diablo 2. From what I saw, I don't know, but it's definitely worth checking out. But it just felt, I don't know, it felt like it'd be better on the PC.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll go back and play it on the PC, because I think it might still be upwards of $60.
What?
Yeah. Well, this is Blizzard that we're talking about.
You Hearthstone making something.
This is Blizzard that we're talking about, so I think they're still charging $60 for it. You might get the first expansion with it for the $60 now. I don't know. I'd have to check it out, but I think it might still be $60 for the game. So I don't know if I'll go back and play it on the PC. But yeah, definitely, it's not a bad game. I went back and, as I said, I played it again. The first couple of times that I played it, I picked Witch Doctor. I'm not sure why. I picked Witch Doctor for those two playthroughs, and I think part of the problem was that Witch Doctor just didn't fit what I was expecting from the game. You know, I mean, as you're going through, you start with the lobe dart, so, like, you're walking through and you just hear, thump, 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 thump. It's like, that's not what I've come to expect in these type of games. Like, I come to expect, like, these huge spells or fireballs and guns blowing stuff up. And, like, even playing Torchlight 2, I played the Outlander class. I know you haven't played Torchlight 2, but I played the Outlander class, and it's like a dual pistol-wielding dude who's just going around shooting stuff and blowing stuff up and that kind of stuff. So I went back and I picked Demon Hunter the second playthrough, and the first time I discharged my weapon, it was that familiar, you know, instead of boom, 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 and I'm like, oh, okay, this now, just having this and hearing that gun, this is better.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird how just that one single little change can make it game seem completely different. It's like, oh, this is a completely different game. I'm now shooting a gun instead of a silly blowgun.
That was,
I mean, it was a lot more fun just from the beginning for me as a solo game. I mean, as a two-player game, as a couch co-op, I would definitely continue to play it as a couch co-op.
If we
just, like I said, if we get bored with the other games and just sit down and mess around with it and
So you got it from Gamefly.
I got it from Gamefly.
You don't actually own that.
I don't actually own that. All
right. I'll buy it because we have the same game on my hard drive, so I'll buy it, and that way we can pick it up and maybe, you know, whenever we feel like it, when we get together and end our nights, we can put some time in on it, see how far we get.
And maybe revisit it on the website or something
that.
And
just get more of a complete view.
Picture of the game.
Yeah.
And I think the advantage... Because we talked about the disadvantages, but I think the advantage of releasing it on the console was that they couldn't do that real money auction house, so they had to do something about the loot. So that's why it felt more natural. It felt more like Diablo on the console, because they couldn't have a real money auction house, so they just had to say, well, you know, you're getting loot.
Yeah, it'll be more driven towards your class.
Towards your class, right?
Right, right.
And they have, the other thing that I liked about it is that they have personalized loot, so, like, if it drops for your character, then it told you that it dropped for your character and that you could pick it up and that you could equip it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It does auto-equip, which is nice, because then you don't have to mess around with the menu and the...
Goddamn wonky analog stick.
The analog stick. That's, I mean, it's like they couldn't figure that out. Yeah. Now, you haven't played Torchlight 2 at all.
No, that's definitely on the list. I gotta get on that.
I still prefer that, even... over Diablo. There's tiny little things that I like about Torchlight 2 over Diablo. First is the colors are much more vibrant, and the story is, you know, the story. It's the same kind of story. So
yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
Yep.
You have a pet in Torchlight 2, which is really cool, because the pet can pick up items for you, can sell items for you.
Yeah.
It can help you in combat. You can customize it a little bit, like you can customize your character.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was in the first Torchlight, too.
Yeah, see, I never played the first one.
It's really good. And that actually felt more like kind of like a Diablo 1. Like, basically, you start off at the town.
Right.
And then you kind of go down into a mine. Okay. And you, like, keep going to different levels of the mine. And then you kind of end up in, like, a hell-type place. And
okay.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, but, yeah, that pet. I love that. That whole pet mechanic is awesome, because that's the worst part of Diablo, yeah. Is when you got too much loot, right. But you couldn't pick anything up, yeah. Just flop up in the air and hit the ground.
Your bags are too full.
What? We'll take them.
it is frustrating to get a finally get that drop and want to pick it up and equip it, and then
yeah,
it goes
yeah.
flying up in the air and falls back down, and you're like,
son of a,
what am I gonna do? I gotta get rid of stuff, and especially for somebody like me, like it's those are the worst games for somebody like me, because I'm a pack rat, so I pick stuff up and I'm like, this might be useful later when it's never ever going to be useful, but
yeah, yeah.
I figured out with Torchlight 2. Torchlight 2 is nice because it's like, you know, you're going to get so much loot that it doesn't really matter if you accidentally sell something that maybe would be useful.
Yeah,
because it's like, I mean, if you get anything that's of common quality or whatever.
Yeah.
That's going in the pet and getting sold. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, if it's not
yeah.
glowing green or blue or anything like that,
right.
then forget
gone.
It's gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, and I guess, I didn't need to get that same mindset with Diablo, but for some reason, I just can't get past that mindset. Like, even in Marvel Heroes, which is another one of these types of games, and the loot, like, you like loot? That game is, like, they literally call it loot explosions.
Yeah.
Like, you beat a boss and it's just like, stuff just explodes everywhere. And, so... But it's the same kind of thing. Like, I pick stuff up and it just sits there, and then
yeah.
I like stare at it. I'm like, oh, I gotta sell that next time I'm in town. But then I go to town and I don't sell it.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's the best part of that whole pet mechanic is you just send
right.
your pet into town and it just sells your
right,
pet.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You just put the stuff on the pet, send them in town.
That's it.
Go take a pee break or whatever, and
yeah.
come back and you got more gold and
you're rich.
Less stuff. The other thing I like about Torchlight 2 is that. I don't know if this happens in Diablo. Yeah, I didn't see it happen. Maybe I wasn't paying attention, but if you get a critical hit, or if you finish off an enemy with a critical hit, they explode, which again fits into that whole...
Didn't do that in Diablo.
No, I don't think it did
yeah,
in Diablo.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't ever remember seeing it, but yeah, the enemy will explode, and that's fun. Anytime something explodes, it makes a big boom.
I'm so happy.
You know, you gotta get your... You gotta get your jollies where you can get them again. Right. So, I think for the two of us, we agree that on the Xbox 360, Diablo 3 is a definite get some friends together, sit on the couch,
yeah,
blow up some demons, blow up some skeletons.
Yep. You won't regret it. You will regret it if you play it by yourself, because it's not as fun.
It's definitely not as fun. I think part of the fun, too, is because if you play online, you might play with a random person. That person may or may not be, you know, connected as far as communication-wise. But if you're playing with somebody or a bunch of friends on a couch, it's that thing where you get together and you,
yeah.
you know, talk crap at the TV and yell at each other and tell each other how much they suck. And it's
stop taking all the gold.
Exactly, stop taking all the gold.
I can't help it.
But at least they can't take your loot, though.
That's right.
That's the good thing.
Yep.
They can stare at it and drool over it, and you can make them sweat a little bit, but they can't take your...
I was all over that gold.
That's right.
Maybe it dropped. I was all over it like a whore.
So, yeah, we'll definitely get some friends together. Check it out. It's really cheap now on the consoles. You'll still pay $60 on the PC, and you won't have the same experience. Unless you're more of a solo player, then I guess, than just $60. Don't play a solo on the console, though. I think we can both agree on that.
Yeah, definitely.
Pick it up, get some friends, and
give it a shot.
Yep. All right, that's it for this month. You can email us as usual at noobandblonde@gmail.com. You can now follow us on Twitter at the same noobandblonde. You can search for us, Two Guys Gaming, on YouTube. There's nothing there right now, but there should be shortly. Come to our website, www.d-ec.info/twoguygaming. I know that's a little rough now, but we have some new things on the horizon. That website address should be much easier to remember and find starting next month. Also next month, we're going to do a comic book themed episode with HeroClix and Lego games. Thanks as always for listening, and we'll catch you next month.
See you later, guys.
This is Two Guys Gaming, signing off.
We are
guitar music for the Pokemon theme song means that we're hanging with the Gamer Bros right now. You want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Liam, and this is Aiden. Say hello, Aiden.
Hi.
Every now and then, we're going to check in with them. Liam and Aiden are my sons. They're gamers like me. They like playing video games. Excuse me, mostly Pokemon trading card game, and they sometimes play Magic with me. And they like to play games on the Xbox and Wii. So we'll check in with them every once in a while to see what the next generation is gaming. This time I wanted to talk to them about YouTube, because they like to watch YouTube a lot, and ask them about some of their favorite shows and episodes that maybe you haven't seen yet. What did you want to talk about, Liam?
I wanted to talk about different things. I had two things I wanted to talk about. Some Pokemon websites that are on the computer, and some YouTube videos that you could check out, but I don't know which one you want to talk about first.
What do you want to talk about, Aiden?
There's three games that me and Liam have on the computer, and my favorite one so far is Gold, because I already have a lot of Pokemon on there, and you have to beat your rival before you can get Pokeballs to catch Pokemon, and I think it's pretty fun.
So what you're saying is this gets a challenging game?
Yes.
So that's Pokemon Gold that you're talking about?
Yes.
And that's, you play that on the computer?
Yes.
How do you play that on the computer?
It's different controls than the Game Boy Color, like you would usually play on it. It's D and C as the A and B buttons, D the A button, C the B button, and then you just use the key, the arrow keys to walk.
But what website do you go to play the game?
You just have to type in, play Pokemon games, free old Pokemon games, online at PlayR. If you just type in play Pokemon Gold online, it will link will pop up, and it will say play free old Pokemon games at PlayR.
So it's PlayR, so you just go on Google and type in play Pokemon Gold?
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty cool. What other, is that the only website that you go to play Pokemon games?
No. I also go to GameOldies.com. It doesn't have just Pokemon games, it has, like, things from the Game Boy Color, and the Game Boy Advance, so.
That's pretty cool. So those are two websites that people can check out to try to play old Pokemon games, and they can play old Game Boy games, too.
There's, games that you can get on the website you can get the old games on the website for free, because if you can't get them on your Game Boy, you can get them on the computer. And Liam has a bunch of games on the computer so far, and I've only got three.
Okay, that's cool. So that's something that people can definitely check out.
Now, what about YouTube? You guys like to watch YouTube a lot. What are some of your favorite YouTube videos that you watch?
Mostly I'm munching orange, but some of his videos have swears in it, so if you don't like swears, I would suggest not watching some of his. Just, like, try to figure out if they have swears or something. But, I also like Tyranitar2b and Jay Witz. They're very, very funny.
So, Aiden, what kind of videos do you like watching?
I like watching videos that are funny because it helps you with seeing which new games there are and games that you don't have and help you find other ways to play games.
So you like informational and funny games?
You like stuff that's funny and informational where they tell you about the new games and maybe they tell you how to
play the games. That's basically the definition of Jay Witz.
That's Jay Witz?
Yes.
How do you spell that?
J-W-I-T-T-Z.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if it was W-I-T-S or something like that. So Jay Witz and Munching Orange. Munching Orange, I guess you got to watch out for because he does some swears in his videos.
Not a lot, but sometimes you might run into a couple, but not a lot.
So just listener discretion, just be advised if you go to Munching Orange that there might be some swears. So just be careful on his videos.
There's also, if you like remixes on YouTube, there's a guy called Tacturn Artist, and he does like a lot of Pokemon remixes, and they're really, really good.
Are those the songs that you listen to when you're playing the game sometimes, or when you're doing
dishes
and stuff like that?
Yeah, but it's not just Tacturn Artist. We also listen to King Spankings.
King Spankings?
Yeah.
Weird. People have weird names on YouTube.
I know. He's basically, his first icon was a Pikachu with, disco.
Munching Orange, is that the guy that dresses up like Ash that I see you watching sometimes?
No, that's Jay Witz.
Oh, that's Jay Witz. He dresses up like Ash?
Yes.
He's got a bunch of viewers, so people have probably heard of him, but in case you haven't, you can check him out because he's pretty funny and he does some good stuff.
And if you like just basically informational videos, you could look up Tamashii Hiroki. She doesn't just do Pokemon. I think she mostly does Pokemon, but every once in a while I run into something that isn't really Pokemon related.
Okay, and you had something you wanted to say?
Sometimes with Munching Orange, he sometimes tries not to swear. He says words that are pretty bad, but he tries not to swear sometimes.
He mostly doesn't do it in his playthroughs. It's more his top 10 videos. I think it's just a different database, and he uses different things.
Okay, so if you're looking for videos that don't have swears in them, then just check out his playthrough videos where he shows you the game and stuff like that, and maybe avoid his top 10 so that you don't get too much swearing. There was something else you said this morning, Ada, when we were talking about doing the podcast or video, and you said you weren't sure if you could mention it.
There's, Archie Loves Maxi, and I'm not...
It's created by Super Bronkman.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any swears, but it does have a little bit of a word that Aiden doesn't like, so I'm not going to say it. He freaks out whenever he hears someone else say words he doesn't like or swears, but when he says them, he doesn't freak out. But it's a pretty funny video. It just got a sort of inappropriate word, so.
Okay, so again, you can check that one out, but just be advised that there may be an inappropriate word if mom or dad hears it. They might not let you go on YouTube for a while.
That's basically almost all of the Pokemon channels we watch. I also watch Mandan JTV. I don't know if I said that right. I've done that him a couple of times. I don't even think he swears, but I can't honestly remember. He does top 10 videos. They're pretty good. So.
Okay, so those are the kinds of things that they wanted to talk to you about this time around. They wanted to mention the Pokemon website, so if you can't get the games, because some of the older Game Boy games are a little bit expensive, but you
and
can play them for free.
And very rarer now.
Yeah, they're getting rarer because people collect this kind of stuff. So they're getting rare and expensive, and if you want to play these games that maybe you never got a chance to play because they're older games, and maybe you don't have a mom or dad that plays video games that collected them or something like that, then you can go on these websites and check them out. Or maybe you just never got a chance to play them. Maybe you are a mom and dad and you want to play them, and you just never got a chance. So check out that website, and they wanted to tell you about some YouTube channels that they watch. Again, YouTube can be weird sometimes, so just watch out. Hopefully none of the websites or none of the videos that we send you to are, you find them too offensive, because we're just trying to find things for you that we think you'll have fun with and that you'll enjoy. And this has been the Gamer Bros.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.